This is Building Bridges, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
Later on, Greek tragedy, Europe's Achilles heel. So what's it got to do with us?
But first...
Same arms, same peace, no justice, no peace.
So 400 protesters greeted Sotheby's $500 million auction, the high-spirited, very high-decibel demonstration in solidarity with its locked-out workers, numerous unions and college students and staff, and of course Occupy Wall Street activists, joined in the demonstration. Six people were arrested in an act of civil disobedience just inside Sotheby's. We now go to the demonstration.
Union busting!
Where are you from?
Christine Williams, CW Local 100. I'm in full support of the Sotheby's Lockdown Teamsters. Oh, they're trying to take away everything from them. They want to take away their retirement funds, wages, and they're not even small givebacks. These are major givebacks.
There are a lot of CW members here?
There's going to be a lot of them coming down later on today. And also last week, there was a TW member that actually got arrested. TW is full of support.
Great. And what are the issues at TWU that are coming up?
As you know, the 15th, our contract expires. We'll be fighting for a fair and just contract starting November 15th. We're asking all our allies to support us.
And what do you think the connection between the issues are?
The connection is workers' rights and human rights. We want the basic access to clean, safe working environment.
And your feelings about Occupy Wall Street?
The Occupation Wall Street movement has united every struggle in New York, across the nation, across the town. I think it's a beautiful thing. The backdrop between all the struggles, housing, unemployment, lack of health care. The Occupation Wall Street movement has gone global, and TWU was there from the start, and we're proud of that.
What's your name?
Christine Williams, TWU Local 100. I'm a station agent.
This is Jason Ide, who is the president of Local 814, of which the Sotheby workers are a part of. And Jason, I see this movement is building. I was here about 3 weeks ago, and you got a lot more people today. What's been happening?
Well, I think what you're seeing is not only Occupy Wall Street and unions coming out, but now even just people from the general public. There's students here, there are artists here, and we're really seeing a groundswell of support.
Let's talk about the issues here for the workers at Sotheby's.
Management has come to the table and demanded concessions from the workers despite reporting their most profitable quarter in their history as well. They want to slash the workday by 30 minutes. They want to cut overtime compensation. They want the right to terminate the workers' 401k plans. And they don't want to agree to language that would protect basically their being union workers in the future. Right now, we're sort of being phased out by attrition, which is just ridiculous. We're down. We had 55 art handlers. Now we're down to 43. And you're seeing more and more temporary workers, and it's a big problem. We have to defend good union jobs.
What do the workers do?
They handle Rembrandts and Picassos. They install contemporary art. They basically take care of all the valuable art objects that come here through Sotheby's. It's a skilled position. It's a job that they love, a job that some of them have been doing for up to 42 years. I did this job myself for 6 years, and I was still learning every single day I was on the job. You learn a lot from especially the folks who have been here over 40 years, over 30 years. They really teach you how to handle art carefully and how to really care about the property itself.
Sotheby's, tell me more about them.
In the worldwide, there's really only two very large auction houses at this scale. It's Sotheby's and Christie's. In New York, they're both signed Teamster contracts. Christie's is currently under contract with the union. Now we're over here at Sotheby's, where they're doing their biggest sale of the year tonight, which is contemporary art. We have hundreds of people out here protesting this auction, where they stand to make millions and millions of dollars. They have really adopted us and have come out to support us on several occasions. They've even disrupted a few auctions. It's just amazing, their level of support for organized labor in New York. Our members go down to the park, and they have political conversations with people, and I think that's also good. The kind of level of discussion that's going on in the labor movement right now and in the country is very inspiring.
And what other comment support are you getting? I know a lot of Hunter College staff and students here. Who else is supporting? What kind of support are you getting?
There are a lot of Teamster locals here tonight who are out supporting us. We see folks from Brand Workers United. There are folks from the laborers. We've gotten huge support from Local 46, the iron workers, and folks from Occupy Wall Street. So we have a really broad fighting this thing to the end until the workers get a fair contract. And we just appreciate all the support from all the people out there who have come out to support us.
Thanks so much. I'm speaking to Jason Hyde, who's the president of Local 814 of IBG. Think of the demonstration.
I think this is an excellent demonstration. We need to show our support for the union workers here.
What do you think the issues are here?
The union workers here at Sotheby's have been locked out because Sotheby's, the art collector, is unwilling to negotiate a contract. I'm interested in all issues of anti-oppression, but I definitely see the crucial role that labor issues play within the network of these struggles.
Any other issues in particular that you've been involved in?
Definitely. I've been organizing around anti-racist struggles. I've also been working with Solidarity with Palestine work on the NYU campus and other labor struggles in the city.
How long have you been at the Occupy Wall Street?
Since the September 17th rally is when I first started getting involved. That's the first day.
Well, it's grown tremendously since then, not only in New York, but around the country and the world. You must feel really proud.
Yeah, hopefully we can keep growing and build some sustainable organizations.
So we're approaching the two-month anniversary of Occupy Wall Street on the 17th. What's going to be happening then?
It's a national day of action for students and for any Occupy movement in general. In New York City, there's going to be three main times at which actions are going to take place. You can look it up online at Occupy Wall Street. I just want to make sure people know that, you know, this movement definitely needs committed activists who are going to be able to build upon this ground. You know, we need to be able to sustain organizations that are continue to fight the struggle. So.
Okay, well, it's 2 months old now. I just can't seem to wait to see what happens in another 2 months. Thanks so much. Speaking of Sean from Occupy Wall Street.
Of demonstrators who went to sit down in front of the doors or on the inside of the doors, and then suddenly it was like a rugby scrum. There were security guards all over them, basically clobbering them. Some of them got dragged out by the ankles, like across the sidewalk. One guy got basically stomped on by the guards. It was pretty intense.
This is the private security guards or the cops?
The private security guards who are from Metro One, I believe, and Andrews Security.
There must be about 100 of them here.
Yeah, there are. I mean, the security at Sotheby's has been extraordinary. Folks have been disrupting auctions from Occupy Wall Street on the inside, and they ratcheted up the security each time to the point now that it's like a fortress.
I mean, they're just lined up here in front of the entire building.
Yeah, they're, I mean, it's even worse inside. When we were able to still get people inside, they would have 12 security guards on every floor inside their own building. I mean, it's crazy.
So let me get this straight. There were probably about six protesters who sat down at the entrance. Is that it?
Yes, that's correct. And the security guards jumped on them, dragged them away violently. This is nonviolent civil disobedience, and they got real, really panhandled badly.
Were the protesters from Occupy Wall Street or from the
group? Yeah, the direct actions have been entirely Occupy Wall Street planned and executed. It's all Occupy Wall Street folks.
Speaking of Michael Landau and the demonstration, confirming there were about a half dozen protesters from Occupy Wall Street who were not only arrested but manhandled by the security guards. Okay, thanks so much.
Reporting from the latest Sotheby's Union demonstration, this is Ken Nash from WBAI's Building Bridges.
And we're going to move on, and we're going to take a look at the world economy in a manner of speaking now. So from Occupy Wall Street to the world. But then again, that's what Occupy Wall Street is doing. It's a world communication system, among other things. As the G20 Economic Summit met in Cannes, austerity was sweeping Europe. The future of the Eurozone was in doubt, and the Greek government collapsed over its proposed new debt agreement with the European Union.
A deal was reached by European leaders to stabilize the euro and to avoid Greek default on its debts to the bank or leaving the euro currency zone. But Greek citizens are angry over the proposed agreement's focus on more austerity to repay bank loans, leading to increased unemployment. A new world recession may be drawing closer after the G20 failed to agree on fresh financial help for distressed countries, and debt-ridden Italy was forced to agree to the International Monetary Fund's monitoring of its austerity program.
So now, Greek tragedy, Europe's Achilles heel, with Leo Panitch, professor of political science at York University, Canada, and editor of the Socialist Register. And Leo, how does the Greek debacle affect us anyway? And welcome to Building Bridges.
Good question, and thanks for having me on. Well, it affects us. We're all part of this global capitalist financialized economy. And Goldman Sachs, the role they played in creating the Greek mess, they were selling the Greek government securities that tided them over for quite a while in terms of their deficits, both trade deficits and fiscal deficits, by which the Greeks, for instance, agreed that in return for money to cover those deficits in the short run, those who bought the securities would get all of the income from the Athens airport for the next 30 years. So all of the fees associated with planes landing there, or cars parking there, or what have you, would go to people over the next 30 years in exchange for ponying up money in the short run to cover their deficit. So Goldman's played a role in this. Wall Street is implicated in it. The very large loans that the banks in Europe, one of them's already gone under, have to Greece, they're holding those bonds when it's not pension funds or insurance companies. Well, if those banks were to take a big hit, that would affect the banks on Wall Street. Everybody's connected, and I might say it's not only the 1%. Don't think that the pension funds of teachers and others, including in the private sector, don't have investments that include Greek bonds or European bonds in general. You know, we are all bound up in this irrational capitalist system.
Well, Greece right now seems to be in the forefront of this strangulation. Yeah. The rest of us are feeling it in one degree or another, certainly Britain and Italy and the rest of Europe, but Greece seems to be leading the way. Is there a way out for them? I mean, can they abandon the euro?
Yes,
can they just default?
People were buying Greek bonds to begin with because they figured that they would be backed by the European Union, and they paid a higher rate than other bonds. So, you know, the people were speculating on getting a higher return by buying Greek bonds. You know, they got into this situation on the basis of Germany exports to Greece. Greece, in order, because it can't export as much, in order to buy those German goods, was borrowing money. Other people were engaging in private investment in Greece, buying up pieces of Greece. So they were getting, therefore, the money with which to buy the German exports. Germany couldn't have had the growth it had unless it was exporting to the periphery of Europe, to what are known as the pigs, Portugal, Italy, Greece, and Spain. Well, you know, Germany has a surplus of $180 billion a year. The pigs, those four peripheral countries, have a deficit, a trade deficit of the same amount. So, you know, if Germany would pony up about 5% of its GNP, if it would engage in a massive stimulus inside its own country, this could be solved, but they don't want to solve it. They want to use this as an opportunity to restructure the other economies, to gain, above all, labor flexibility, to reduce the size of the public sector, etc. And Greece could have said, you know, you were speculating in buying our bonds. We're defaulting. That's what eventually Argentina did after experiencing a lot of pain for many years before they agreed to it. That would have involved them being kicked out of the euro, whether they would have left it or not, another question. But I think we need to be honest that, you know, leaving the euro also means that the Greek people will suffer. They would not get loans from foreign capitalists any longer, from foreign central banks. They still would need import stuff. This would affect them seriously. The question is, would it be worth it for reorienting their economy in a more cooperative, democratic, internally developmental manner without necessarily cutting them off from the rest of the world? And, you know, I think one needs to be honest about what is the pain going to be for? Is the pain going to be for the benefit of the bankers, or is the pain going to be for the benefit of a more cooperative and democratic Greece in the future?
Leo, on a day-to-day basis, the mass media here is in a state of virtual hysteria. You can see the pounds of sweat dripping from them as they worry about Greece and, in the not-far background, Italy, in suggesting, of course, that the impacts there will inevitably bring down the entire U.S., economic structure or throw us further into recession. Question really is, what is the interrelatedness of the world economies today and the role that the U.S. played in perhaps being the catalyst for the degradation of the world's economy?
Well, degradation perhaps is too hard a word for it. The American state has been at the center of what we know as globalization. It's had a project of spreading capitalism around the world and opening up as many countries in the world to free trade and free capital flows. That's been its project since the Second World War. That's not to say they've imposed it necessarily in other countries, least of all Europe. This was, if you like, imperialism and capitalism by invitation. Especially the ruling classes of Europe wanted this, and at a time when socialist and communist forces were strong in Europe, the ruling classes, in a sense, switched their allegiance to the American state in order to get this. You know, you didn't get it all at once. It took a 20, 30, 40-year period. But, you know, with all the free trade agreements, which were as much about free capital movements as about the free movement of goods, and above all, financial services, that you couldn't discriminate against a foreign provider of financial services by favoring a domestic one. What you increasingly got was an Americanization of Europe, especially in finance. That isn't to say that Americans took over European banking, but European banks adopted American forms of banking and increasingly integrated themselves with Wall Street and, above all, with London, which is the city of London, which is really a satellite of Wall Street's big investment banks. So all of the euro bonds, for instance, even though England isn't in the euro, all the euro bonds are actually mostly sold in the city of London, and they're mostly sold by American banks who, you know, make the fees on the selling, buying and selling of these bonds. So, you know, it's an integrated economy, above all between Europe and the United States, but also increasingly, it's been a long story with Japan, but increasingly many, many developing third world capitalist states. They're integrated, there's no question. And when the crisis happened in 2007, 2008, and it was an American crisis, it was a made-in-America crisis, it was about the bubble in American mortgage securities and in housing, it immediately spread to Europe. And that's because European banks, European municipalities were holding these mortgage securities, which they considered as safe as U.S. Treasury bonds. Turned out not to be, and the crisis was very severe in Europe. And the extent to which this is an integrated economy was seen in the fact that the U.S. Federal Reserve was bailing out European banks as quickly and with as much money as it was American banks. They didn't advertise that very much because that would have got them in trouble with populists in the United States who say, why the hell should we be doing this? Now, you know, in terms of degradation, this hasn't all been about degradation. Capitalism has been a very dynamic system. The Europeans were very keen to get into this game, and the Greeks were very keen to get into Europe. And even today, those people who don't want to leave the euro are afraid, not only for economic reasons, but for cultural reasons, that they would become isolated culturally from this broader, more universalistic culture. So it's no easy thing to walk away from this, but it's an irrational system. It's a system that inherently is volatile and produces crises. And it's a system which increasingly removes people's security. It's a competitive world, so that people increasingly are driven to give up what security they have in order to be competitive. And that involves privatizations. I mean, you know, in the end, some foreigner, who knows, some American capitalist may end up owning the Parthenon in order for Greece to pay off its debt. So it's an irrational system. It's been a dynamic one, but it's very crisis-ridden. And the American state plays the main role in trying to contain it. The Germans have been very insular and always in this respect. It's the Federal Reserve and the Treasury who are saying to the European Central Bank and the Europeans generally, you need to do what we did in 2008. You need a TARP bailout. You need to bail out the whole bloody system, pour liquidity into it, pour funds into it, and then we'll worry about the next problem. And that's how the United States is running the world, in a sense. It's keeping the system going. It's keeping the boat afloat in this irrational world. And, if anything, it's the Americans who are being much less insistent on austerity than the Europeans are.
The financial transactions tax that a lot of people are talking about, both in Europe and here, obviously wouldn't be enough to change the system and make it rational. But would it be a help?
Yeah, it could. It wouldn't make it much less volatile. This idea originally came from some economists who thought if you introduced this, there wouldn't be as much capital flows, there wouldn't be as much flipping of financial instruments. I don't think that's likely. They would just price that in. You know, it essentially would amount to a tax on financial corporations or people who are engaged in financial transactions. I should point out that that also includes insurance companies and pension funds. So they would pay that cost as well. So it isn't just, again, that 1% that pays it. And of course, the banks would find a way of passing that tax on to consumers in higher fees, et cetera, higher credit card rates, because they control those kinds of decisions. You know, yes, it might give states some more tax base, and heaven knows they need them. One of the scandals of the way capitalist democracy has operated in the last 30 years is that parties have bought votes by promising people they wouldn't pay taxes. And I should point out that's not only the rich, of course, they've benefited the most, but everybody has promised that they won't pay taxes, even if working people and poor people don't get nearly as much as rich people out of those breaks.
Leo,
in order to have a decent public system, in order to have education, transportation, etc., people of every class need to be prepared to pay some taxes. It ought to be far more progressive. But this wouldn't remove the irrationality of the system. The only thing that would remove it is to turn banking into a public utility.
That's what I was waiting for you to say. I was about to put you on the Alternative Working Committee meeting at the atrium of the IRT subway with Occupy Wall Street and say, what is to be done, my brother?
If
we only had the political forces to do it. But yes, banking needs to be a public utility in the same way that the way that electricity became a public utility when it was used by shysters to screw very high energy prices out of people. This is the money that people put into the banking system. It's the savings they put into the banking system. It's our money, in essence, whether it's pensions, insurance policies we buy, whether it's our paychecks that our employers put into our bank accounts and we draw on, and then that money is used till we draw it by banks to decide what's to invest, where it's to be invested, how it's to be invested, what's to be produced, et cetera. Those ought to be democratic decisions. And they are now decisions, and they have been, of course, for centuries, in capitalist societies. Those are decisions made on what will happen with people's savings, and they are made now in this competitive, driven, financialized way. At the beginning of having a genuine democracy, And if we don't have a genuine democracy insofar as we don't have economic democracy, the beginnings of it is to have a banking system which is a public utility. But do we have the political forces that can explain to people how this would be part of a democratic system of economic planning and would mobilize support behind this and would be prepared to meet the enormously powerful opposition that it would run up against? No. So, yes, one hopes that what Occupy Wall Street is about is the beginnings of that kind of a political movement that would have that kind of large, ambitious vision.
I know Ken was saying Occupy Toronto, but I'm a little more selfish. First, I want to tackle New York City. So, Leo, we need you here.
You're talking to a Canadian here.
Well, you guys are the center of the universe.
That's what I've been. It's a little chauvinistic on our part, but indeed. But I'll tell you what
until
they also.
Until you guys get your stuff together and start changing the United States, there's only so much we can do in the rest of the world.
And a Canadian is saying that. My goodness.
The belly of the beast here.
This reminds me of John Candy's Canadian bacon. We want a war. Let's start it with Canada. But
right.
Leo Panitch, I thank you for that education. I still insist that you come here, join the alternative economics. And by the way,
a couple of weeks ago,
we feed people. They fed 1,000 people last night at Occupy Wall Street. So my sisters and brothers, they are creating a democratic community. And these are some of the very ideas that they are exploring. And Leo Panitch, thank you for taking the time to help explore them with us. And you must come back much more often, not only to look at the Greek tragedy, as we called it, Europe's Achilles heel, but so much more. It's been a pleasure.
Happy to talk to you.
And we have been speaking with Leo Panitch, who is the professor of political science at York University, author of numerous articles, and editor of the Socialist Register. Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.